Well, for some time now, I've been trying to get a study rolling about the Feast of the Lord. And I haven't been very successful. It seems like something's come up every time. But we are in full stride starting tonight. So as an introduction, if you want to grab one of the pew Bibles, we're going to be in the book of Leviticus. And so I know this has a tendency to not be a very exciting study. So I'm going to try to add a few interesting things. But there's some thoughts here that are very, very important to really understanding, really, as I'm figuring out a lot of the Bible. So I'm on page 140. This is where I am in the pew Bible. That is where the book of Leviticus starts. And so as I was reading this introduction to the book of Leviticus, it says Leviticus is God's guidebook for his newly redeemed people, showing them how to worship, serve, and obey a holy God. Fellowship with God through sacrifice and obedience shows the awesome holiness of the God of Israel. Indeed, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. That's from chapter 19, verse 2. It says, Leviticus focuses on the worship and walk in the nation of God. In Exodus, Israel was redeemed and established as a kingdom, a priest, and a holy nation. Leviticus shows how God's people are to fulfill their priestly calling. This is the important part, I think. I'm skipping to the second verse here. The second sentence says, the Talmud refers to Leviticus as the law of the priest and the law of the offerings. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, the different types of offerings. So we're going to look at types of sacrifice under the law of Moses. And so it might surprise you a little bit. How many types of sacrifice do you think there were under the law of Moses? 2? 8? 12? Any guesses? The answer is 5. There are 5 types of sacrifice. And as I've been studying through this, I'm starting to realize that the more understanding we have really starts to bring out just more knowledge and things that we've read before, because we hear all this about burnt offerings and sacrifices. And I, for one, have not understood it very well. So hopefully after this study, we will have a little more understanding. Here are the 5. There's what's called a burnt offering. There's what's called a grain. And that's the one that messes me up, because the King James Version calls it a meat offering. There's no meat in it. The meat offering is actually a grain offering. It is from the field. So that always kind of threw me for a loop. New King James is going to read grain offering. But if you see meat, that's what it's talking about. It's what's known as a peace offering. I think if I was an Israelite, this would be my favorite one. It would be the peace offering. Number 4, we have what's called a sin offering. And number 5 is the trespass, or sometimes referred to as the guilt offering. So we're going to very quickly run through these 5 types of sacrifice, or 5 types of offering that were authorized in the book of Leviticus. And as I said, it could get a little bit dry. I think it's important that we form this foundation of our study. But I've tried to come up with some interesting things, especially for the kids, that might help them to remember some of this study. So we're going to look at the different types of sacrifice under the law of Moses. Before we go further, let's go to God in word of prayer. Well, let's begin with number 1, the burnt offering. I've read this my whole life, the idea we're supposed to, people of the Old Testament time under the law of Moses were required to offer burnt offerings. But I don't really know that I understood what that meant. So let me try to give you some advice on it. I wish that this was written like a manual of some sort where it had a table of contents and I could say burnt offering, look at Leviticus 1, and then it would have everything there. It's not written like that. It kind of skips around and it's confusing, and it'll go by talking about one type of offering to talking about another type, and it'll go through all of them, and then it'll circle back around and it'll say something else. There are a lot of exceptions into this that, maybe not exception may not be the right word, but different stipulations that an offering may be offered a certain way for one person, somebody else, if you were a priest, you had to do it a different way. And there's a lot of moving parts in these sacrifices. I will tell you, burnt offering is pretty much outlined in Leviticus 1. So I'm not going to read the whole chapter to you. But Leviticus 1 is going to talk about the idea of this burnt offering. The general purpose of a burnt offering was for atonement for sin. And it was the expression of devotion to God. That was the purpose of a burnt offering. So now think back into your mind now. There's all sorts of offerings that we've read about in the Old Testament that we may have just kind of blown through. And I want you to start thinking about them now. Where do these fit? Where do these line up? I remember Noah offered a sacrifice when he walked out of the ark. I remember a time of a sacrifice when Elijah called down fire from heaven and it burned up the altar there, even though he poured water all over it. So start thinking about some of these. There's a whole bunch of sacrifices that we've talked about in offering. See if you can start seeing where they're lining up, and maybe over the coming weeks we'll be able to straighten this out. So the burnt offering was for general atonement for sin and is an expression of devotion to God. I will read from Leviticus 1, verses 3 and 4. It says, if his offering is a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own free will at the door of the tabernacle of meeting before the Lord. Then he shall put his hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it will be accepted on his behalf to make atonement for him. I found some interesting things in this verse right here. Number one, the offering of the herd had to be a male. It had to be without blemish. Here in a little bit, one of the offerings could be a male or female. So it's very specific. It depends what type of sacrifice was being offered, what type of offering it was. It depended. But in this case, notice it says, he shall offer it of his own free will. This type of sacrifice is what is known as a voluntary sacrifice. In fact, the first three that we study are going to be considered voluntary. That meant you could do them at any time. You could do it whenever you've had a need, whenever you felt it. You can offer a voluntary sacrifice. The other two are considered to be obligatory. I mean, they are forced. But even so, you would never be considered to do things against your will. If you didn't want to offer a sacrifice, then by all means, don't offer a sacrifice. God would rather have a true sacrifice than something that was forced anyway. But also want you to notice here, that animal would come up and it says the giver, or the person who was offering the sacrifice, he would put his hand on the head of that animal. And by doing so, it sanctified that animal to be his sacrifice. And it said it would be accepted on his behalf. Sacrifices cannot come by proxy. And I think that's a point that we need to make. I cannot make a sacrifice on your behalf. And you cannot make a sacrifice on my behalf. And so this whole idea, even the Mormon church is very big into baptism for the dead. And they will try to offer sacrifice on the behalf of someone else. Well, I tell you, that certainly did not happen in this time. The man who was offering the sacrifice had to bring the animal, put his hand upon the head of the animal, and in doing so, it was accepted on his behalf. There was no sacrifice by proxy. I think that's important. Here's an interesting point. So I'll try to give you five of these because I know this gets kind of boring. God was very specific that the sacrifice could be a bull, it could be a sheep, it could be a goat, it could be a dove, or it could be a pigeon. The financial situation of the giver was always taken into account. And I think that's interesting because we've kind of lost that in our society. We've kind of lost that. This whole idea of socialism that a lot of the world wants to promote does not follow this concept. The idea is, I don't care if you are rich or poor. In the eyes of God, when it came time to offer a burnt sacrifice, the poor were still expected to offer burnt sacrifice. The rich were expected to offer more. The rich were expected, if they had enough money and they had a bull, they were expected to sacrifice the bull. If you didn't have a bull, then you were expected to sacrifice a sheep. If you didn't have a sheep, you were expected to sacrifice a goat. If you didn't have a goat, you were expected to sacrifice a dove. If you didn't have a dove, you were expected to sacrifice a pigeon. In fact, there's even one of these sacrifices that adds flour. A certain amount, one-tenth of an ephah of flour could be substituted as a sacrifice. So it didn't matter how much you had, everyone was expected to sacrifice. Unfortunately, in our day and time, we're fine with the idea that the rich give more than the poor. But there's not so much the idea of the poor doing what they can, of sacrificing what they have, even if it's not as much. But that's how it was back in the old time, the Old Testament. So there's my interesting point number one. It didn't matter how rich or how poor, everyone was expected to sacrifice something of value to them. Number two. Oh, let me look at this before we go to number two. I made you a little chart here. See if this will kind of help us make sense. A burnt offering. I've got it split into columns here. This is what God received. God received the animal. Because that animal was taken, and when it was a burnt offering, it was burnt. The entire animal was burnt up at the altar. There was nothing left. The priest would receive the skin, or they would receive the hide. So the animal would come up and it would be skinned. They would give that to the priest. Now I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I want that skin. But that was a pretty big deal to the priest, because you could use that skin in a whole variety of ways. Now I think about those Indians who would kill the buffalo. They could find use for every part of that buffalo. And I guess if I was living out in the middle of the wilderness and I had the skin of a bull, I might be able to find some use for it, or a hide of a bull. I guess they had a bunch of baseball gloves and footballs. If you wanted it, you had to go to the priest because they had all of the cowhide. So God got the animal in this case. The priest got the skin. The giver got absolutely nothing. They got no return out of their sacrifice. It all went to God or the priest. That's not always going to be the case. But that's what a burnt sacrifice was. Number two, we have what's called a grain offering. And that's the one I said. This one really messed me up because the King James Version calls this a meat offering. And when I go eat meat and I go get the 3-meat platter at Cooper's Barbecue, I expect sausage and I expect brisket and I expect chicken. Don't give me a plate full of grains. But that's what, under the Old Testament times, a grain offering was actually an offering of the ground. So the grain offering is pretty much outlined in Leviticus chapter 2. So if you want to read through Leviticus chapter 2, when anyone offers a grain offering to the Lord, his offering shall be a fine flour, and he shall pour oil on it and put frankincense on it. And so it goes through the whole chapter of how to make this meat offering or this grain offering. What's its purpose? Well, it showed devotion to God. That you trusted God. You were on God's side. You recognized His goodness. You recognized His mercy. So it really didn't have to do with atonement for sin. It wasn't that type of offering. It was an offering of bread. I thought that's kind of interesting, though. Leviticus 21, or chapter 2, verses 1 and 3. I just read verse 1. But verse 3 says, it is the most holy of the offerings to the Lord made by fire. I'm going to come back here at the end and I'll ask you why. I want you to think about that for a little while. Out of all of these sacrifices we're going to talk about, why do you think the meat or the grain offering was the most holy of the offerings? I have a thought. I don't know that I'm right, but I'll share it with you at the end when we get all the way through. Now, that's kind of interesting because this was to be made of grains and oil. Basically, it was bread. The grain or the meat offering was basically bread. There was a acceptable forms. Chapter 2, verse 4. Says it could be baked in the oven. So you could bake this bread, mix it together with your frankincense and your oil and your flour, mix it up. You could bake it. You can also, what I would call, grill it. In verse 5, it says it could be baked in a pan. So I don't know. Some of the translations seem to render that it'd be like grilling the bread. It wouldn't be baking it. It'd be grilling it. I don't know. I'd also said you could do it in a covered pan. That's what I call roasting. I've never roasted bread before, but I guess you could. You could also do it like a cereal, or what I would call granola. It says you could just take it all and have the grain mixed up and treat it almost like a cereal. Any of those were acceptable, any of those forms. Now, I will tell you there were some things that were common. If you were going to do a grain offering, it says very specifically it must be seasoned with salt. And that is a whole other lesson, and I don't understand it. When you start talking about a salt covenant, it's very rare in the Bible. It's just kind of random. It'll come up and talk about the covenant of salt. I don't know what it means yet. I'm trying to figure it out. Had to be unsweetened, and this also had to be unleavened, which I think is kind of a precursor of the Passover. So that was the grain offering. Here's my interesting point number two. The amount of bread or the amount of grain used in the sacrifice, and therefore, the amount of leftovers depended on if it was being offered by one of the priests or one of the common people. And what I mean by that is, if I was a common everyday Joe Israelite, and I wanted to offer a meat offering or a grain offering, I would take up my offering, my grain, and it says that the priest then would take a handful. And they would take a handful of the grain offering. That's what would be burned. That's what would be burned up on the altar. So what was left? Well, I had a whole bunch left of my offering. That went to the priest. so that the leftovers went to the priests. However, if I was a priest, if I was one of the sons of Aaron, the Levite, and I was making an offering on my behalf as a priest, you wouldn't just take a handful. I would have to take my entire offering and burn it up on the altar, and there would be nothing left. The reason being, I think, no one should be able to profit from their own sacrifice. If I am offering a sacrifice, then I don't get to keep part of it for myself. That's not logical. If that's the case, it's really not a sacrifice. Now, if somebody else is offering a sacrifice, then the priests were allowed to keep the leftovers. And you may think, well, that's not a very big deal. Well, it was to those folks because that's how they survived. They survived off of the leftovers of these different offerings, these meat offerings. This is where they got their grain from. Remember, the Levites didn't have their own land. They did not have any part of the inheritance. So this is where they got their groceries from, is from the leftovers. Now, when I thought about this, no one should profit from their own sacrifice. My mind immediately went to 2 Samuel 24. Remember how David wanted to buy that threshing floor? And the fellow said, listen, you're King David, you're awesome. You can just have it for free. And David would not take that ground. He said, no, but I will surely buy it from you for a price, nor will I offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which cost me nothing. In other words, he said, if it doesn't cost me anything, it cannot be a sacrifice. So David paid for the land. He would not accept it as a gift. He wouldn't accept it free. Well, that's kind of interesting. So that is called our meat offering or our grain offering. So let's go back to our table. Now our grain offering, I had to split it up. Because what did God give? Well, God got all of it burnt in the fire if it was the priest. And the priest would get nothing in return. And guess what? Neither would the giver. If it was a common everyday Israelite, God would get a handful of it burnt up in the sacrifice. The priest would receive the remainder, so they would have their groceries, and the giver would get nothing. That was the idea of the meat. Number three, the peace offering. I just noticed in Aaron's translation it had a different name. There's all sorts of different little translations of this, but I'm going to call this one the peace offering. Peace offering is outlined pretty closely in Leviticus chapter 3. When his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering, if he offers it of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord. So now we get into chapter 3, we're going to talk about a peace offering. Its purpose was to consecrate a meal between two or more parties before God. It was to bring people together. That was the idea of the peace offering. Leviticus 3 and 1, you notice now it can be a male or a female. The goat or the whatever of the herd. There's a new stipulation. Why? I don't know. But the stipulation is certainly there and it's certainly obvious. There's different types of peace offerings. We have one that's called thanksgiving. That's found in chapter 7, verse 12. That's one type of peace offering. There's one called a free will offering. That's a peace offering. There's one called a wave offering, and one that's called a heave. Now, these wave and this heave, I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around, because certain parts of the animal would go to the priest. And so the high priest would receive the breast of the animal. And that was what is known as the wave. And I guess because he would hold it up. And that's why some people think it was called a wave offering. Now that went to the high priest. Whichever priest was actually officiating the service, he got the right forearm of the animal. I don't know what was significant about the right forearm, but that's what he got. And that was known as the heave. So all of this kind of fits together, but they're all part of the peace offering. Now, this is interesting. The disposal of leftovers depended on the type of peace offering that it was. It depended if it was thanksgiving or free will or a wave or a heave. Sometimes you had to eat it all that night. Other times you could keep it to the next morning and then burn what was left. Sometimes you could keep it for 2 days and then burn what was left. Very, very specific. Like I said, I wish it was very easy to find where it was like a table of content, but it kind of hops all around and it's kind of difficult to figure out. But that's an interesting part to the idea of the peace offering. Interesting point number three. Here we go. A peace offering of thanksgiving also specifically had to include different types of breads and cakes. So I think that's interesting. It makes me think about the dessert table when we have Thanksgiving dinner. That it's not enough just to have the animal. No, we got to have bread and some cornbread and some dressing, and we need to have some cake over on the side. Maybe that's where it came from, because the Thanksgiving peace offering had to have bread. So what do we have now? Our peace offering. Now this is, it almost gets semi-disgusting as you read through the chapters, because it talks about the part that God would give. They would take that animal, they would kill it, they would pull out its entrails, they would pull out the kidneys, the liver, and the fat that surrounded the liver and the kidneys, and that's what God wanted. That's what was burnt up in the offering. That's what went on the altar. And it just keeps mentioning this over and over and over. And I think there's something to that. Why God chose the entrails, the kidneys, the liver, and the fat. But give me a little while to try to work on that one. But there's got to be something to that. But that's the part that God wanted. So God got this part in the fire. The priest, well, if you're the high priest, you got the breast of the animal. If you were the, I just put OP, that's officiating priest. If you're the one who's officiating the service, you got the right leg or the right forearm. Now this is why I would like the peace offering. Because you know what was left? Barbecue. And groups could actually come together. Remember, the idea of the peace offering was for two or more groups to come together in the sight of God. So this was just a big old barbecue. So whatever was left of the animal was burnt and could be eaten by the people. They sat down and they had a meal. That was the peace offering. So I think this is the first time, say, we've seen that the giver of the offering actually gets something out of it when they have fellowship. Number four, sin offering. The sin offering now, this is what they call obligatory. This is commanded. The first three were voluntary. You could do it when you wanted. These have a little bit more oomph behind it. The sin offering is outlined in Leviticus 4. Its purpose, now we're serious, is for atonement for sin and for cleansing from defilement. So it has two purposes, atonement for sin and cleansing from defilement. So now when we read about the person who touches the dead body and they were ceremonially unclean, they had to offer a sacrifice, that's what we're talking about. They're having to offer a sin sacrifice or a sin offering because they had to cleanse from defilement. So, we've read about this a lot and may not have known it. So, a couple different types of sin offering. One, it depended if it was the priest who had made a mistake. If the priest had sinned, it was a little bit different than if the whole congregation of Israel had sinned. It was a different type of sin offering. Or maybe there was a ruler and he made an unintentional mistake. Then his sacrifice would be a little bit different than the common everyday Israelite who made an unintentional mistake. But there are sections, and read through chapter 4 and you'll see these different sections delineated of what would happen if you were a ruler who made a mistake. This is what you'd have to do. But the bottom line is, if you were a person in authority, there was more expected of you. And so your sin sacrifice or your sin offering would be different. Sin offering is kind of interesting because it's a combination of both the sin offering and the peace offering that we've already talked about, the burnt offering and the peace offering. It's kind of a combination of the two. And I got to thinking, is that not an example of the goodness and severity of God? The same idea of having the burnt sacrifice and the peace offering at the same time. They seem to go together. So, different types of sin offerings. Interesting point number four. Maybe the kids will get something out of this. After the birth of Jesus, the family was required to present a sin offering. Why? To cleanse from the defilement of the birth. Once you gave birth, the woman was considered ceremonially unclean. So they had to offer a sacrifice. This would have been a sin sacrifice or a sin offering. My question is, how rich was the family of Jesus? Did they have any money? What they offered would give a glimpse into the type of earthly family Jesus was born into. Were Mary and Joseph, did they have any money? And the answer is, not very much. They weren't destitute, but they were poor. And the way I can say that is in Luke chapter 2, when it talks about the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were complete, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord, as is written in the law of the Lord. Every male who opens the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. Verse 24. And to offer a sacrifice according to what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. What did the family of Jesus offer as a sacrifice? A pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Remember how it went? If you had a lot of money, you offered a bull. If you didn't have enough money for a bull, you offered a sheep. If you didn't have enough money to have a sheep, you offered a goat. If you didn't have money to offer a goat, you offered two birds. If you didn't have enough money for that, you got to offer flour. So they weren't the poorest of the land. They were one step up. I think that's kind of interesting. The family of Jesus didn't start out with very much money. So here's our table here. Sin offering, it's going to be the same as the peace offering. The entrails, the kidneys, the liver, the fat, all the nasty stuff in the body, that's what God wanted, and that's what was burned up on the altar. What did the priest get to keep? Well, it depended. It's kind of the same deal. If the sin offering was being offered on behalf of the priest, they got nothing. If it was being offered on behalf of a person, they got the remainder. They got the leftovers. Whoever gave the sacrifice didn't get anything. So, kind of interesting, I think. And our last one is what's known as the trespass offering. Trespass offering is where it gets pretty serious. It's outlined in Leviticus 5. The purpose of the trespass offering was to make reparation of one's sin. So when you sinned against somebody and there was a monetary value to it, that became the trespass offering. So if I sinned against you and it cost you property, I had to pay reparation for that property. Not only did I have to bring a sacrifice to get forgiveness for my sin, I also had to add a little extra into the money. Here's the two major differences. Number one, if you were going to do a trespass offering, the animal had to be a ram. So there was no more exceptions for sheep, goat, birds. You had to have a ram. So that may take a while for you to get the money to get a ram. And secondly, you had to add a 20% restitution fee. And so that's found in Leviticus chapter 5, verse 16. It doesn't say 20%, but I know all of my genius nieces and kids know when it says in verse 16, he shall add one-fifth to it. They know that one-fifth is the same thing as saying 20%. So they had to add a 20% restitution fee. So let me give it like this. Let's say we were doing business, and I did something that cost $100. I cost you $100 of your property. I would have to sacrifice the ram. I would have to repay the $100 that I cost you plus 20%. So if I cost you $100, I would actually have to pay you $120. I'd have to pay 20%. So I'm thinking about this now. One offering, it says silver shekels. We're talking money now. It's getting serious. Interesting point number five. You remember the little short guy named Zacchaeus, who was the tax collector, who climbed up the tree so he could see Jesus? And when Jesus came by, he said, Zacchaeus, come on down. I want to go to your house. I know the old song goes, I'm going to your house for tea. He says, come on down. I'm going to your house. And so they get to talking. And Zacchaeus begins to tell him the story. He says, I'm a tax collector. He says, but I don't steal. And I don't cheat. He says, and if I ever do make a mistake and take something that's not mine, do you remember how much restitution Zacchaeus made? Do you remember how much? Was it 20%? Remember how much Zacchaeus made? We'll get to it in a second. The amount he paid in restitution for any of his mistakes. I think that's why Jesus was so impressed with Zacchaeus. He's a good man. He went well overboard for 20%. Zacchaeus, Luke 19 and 8, stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. So if I took $100, the trespass offering said I'd have to pay the 100 back plus 20%. Zacchaeus said, if I took $100, I'll repay it four times. I'll repay it back $400. So he went way beyond anything that the law of Moses said. Maybe that's why Jesus was so impressed with Zacchaeus. So here's our last title now. The trespass. Okay, God still got the entrails, kidney, liver, and fat. He still got the same thing that was burned up. The priest, Well, they got the remainder, what was left over after the sacrifice of the ram, now remember? And they got a 20% fee. They got 20%, and that's where money came into the treasury. The giver got nothing. So the only sacrifice, or the only offering I could tell that the giver got anything was the peace offering, because he got to enjoy the leftovers in somewhat of a barbecue. Everything else, it was a true and total sacrifice. So I think that's a neat little story. Here's the conclusion. What does all this mean? I don't know. It sure makes you read things a little bit differently now when you start coming across these words about burnt offerings and things like that. It makes you think. How many types of offerings were there under the law of Moses? See if you can quiz yourselves. Five. Single. Which offering was similar to a barbecue? It was the peace offering. Peace offering, everybody got to come together and eat the leftovers. Did the grain offering have to be prepared a certain way? The answer is no. There were several different choices. You could bake it, you could broil it, you could fry it, you could roast it, but there were some stipulations, right? It had to be unleavened, it had to be unsweetened, and it had to have a frankincense and oil in it. So there was some stipulations that were given, and some things there was a little bit of liberty. Was the family of Jesus rich? No, probably not, because they had to offer two turtle doves. And so that tells me they were way down on the totem pole as far as riches go in the country. And how would you classify Zacchaeus and the business ethics? Well, if what he said was true, if he gave back fourfold, Zacchaeus was a pretty good man because he went well above and beyond what he was required to do even as a Jew. And that brings me to Hebrews 10 and 4 as we close the lesson. I want you to think about the amount of blood that was shed at the temple or at the tabernacle on a daily basis. Remember, those first three were voluntary. Any Israelite could do it in either the morning or the afternoon sacrifice. Bulls, goats, rams, turtle doves. And then we had all the big feasts and the obligatory times when all the nation had to come. Can you imagine how many animals were slaughtered in a year? I'm going to try to figure that out for the next lesson. There's a bunch. Out of all that blood that would flow, Hebrews 10 and 4, for it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats could take away sin. It didn't matter how much blood there was. It didn't matter how much sacrifice there was. It could not take away the sins of the world. That is why we need a Savior. And that is why we have Jesus as our Savior. So, thoughts are yours this evening. The story of the different types of offerings. Something I never studied before, so I find it kind of interesting.